thanks again for joining Go Terpins with Travis Garrison. Got legendary Hall of Famer, my former coach, Merlin's former coach, national champion, Coach Gary Williams with us. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify and iTunes at Go Terpins with Travis Garrison. Coach, how you doing?
I'm good, you know, just like everybody else, trying to get through this tough time. But, you know, you just keep fighting. That's all you can do.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, same here. You know, obviously making the adjustments to a lot of things are virtual. And I got the distance learning with the kids. So going through that whole process. And like you said, just adjusting to the town that we're in.
Yeah, it's got to be tough having a couple kids at home. You know, it's it used to be nice to say go to school. You know,
Hey, Coach, I definitely appreciate teachers a lot more now. You know, obviously, because just, you know, I always thought at one point that I wanted to maybe homeschool my kids, but I think I changed my mind about that right about now.
Yeah, my daughter's a teacher in Columbus, Ohio, and they go virtual for a couple of days, and they bring the kids into school for a couple of days, and it's really hard, virtual teaching. It's amazing how difficult that is. Plus, there's a lot of kids that don't have the same equipment that other kids do, that it doesn't really create a level playing field a lot of times in the teaching.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I definitely, you know, obviously a couple of my kids need some help and extra help. And like you said, it doesn't really happen because, you know, the virtual learning, and they have all those other kids that they have to deal with and that whole process. So, but, you know, have you been keeping up with the current team?
Yeah, I watch the games, you know, like everybody else when they're on, I watch them. And, you know, it's an interesting team. They're probably not as big as they'd like to be, but they're certainly talented. Happen to be playing in the best league in the country this year, which, you know, is good and bad. I always like that. Like when we were in the ACC, most years the ACC was the best league in the country. And so, right. You know, if you got some good wins, you accomplished something. You know, there was no easy way out in the ACC. You might play Carolina on Saturday, then have to come back and play NC State on Monday. And NC State wasn't exactly a bad team. They were probably ranked like 25th or something like that in the country. So the thing you learn with that is you don't get too high, you don't get too low. You know, you do whatever you can, you work as hard as you can, and then you win, great. If you lose, you can't let that loss affect the way you play the next game.
Right.
And I think as a coach, you have to learn that, and players have to learn that too.
Right. Absolutely. I know they just got that big win on Sunday. I think that hopefully will boost their momentum, you know, especially they got another game against Nebraska on Saturday. I know they took a couple of losses at Indiana and then, you know, with Michigan, but they was pretty good teams as well. But like I said, they got that big win on Sunday, which hopefully, I know as a player, that kind of like boosts your momentum and hopefully get things back going and turning things around before tournament time.
Yeah, I agree with you, Travis. A lot of times it's just one game or even a half that can really turn your season around. The light goes on for everybody, just coaches, players, whatever. And you get that confidence back that, hey, we're as good as anybody we have to play. And then, you know, practices are different. You don't practice trying to catch up. You practice to keep getting better, you know, and like all good teams this time of year. Now this year might be a little different because of the COVID virus, but all good teams get better in January and February. In other words, whoever's around in March, that's because they got better in January and February.
Right. Yeah, no. And that's another thing with the whole COVID situation. At first, they didn't know they was going to have a season. But now they have a season. They don't have fans. Like, I know by me playing overseas sometimes, you know, we go and play games and there might not be a lot of people in the stands. But when you're a college player and you're used to having 17,000, 18,000 fans, help cheering you on, you know, if you're down, they help cheer you on, get the momentum back going and turn things around. But now the fans happen to be the bench, and the bench end up playing a huge role in sometimes success of the team.
Yeah, I always thought one of the great things about college basketball was the fan base, if you're in a good program, and the thrill. I think all you guys that played college basketball in front of great fans, say in Xfinity or whatever, you experience that. There's not many people that play basketball in the world that ever get a chance to walk out in front of 18,000 people, that the only thing they care about is whether you win or not, and they're going to be behind you. If you get down 10, if you get down 15, they're going to try to make you better and help you win that game. And, you know, that's really a great feeling. I always felt about that, like when we were playing at home, whether it was Coalfield House or Xfinity, and we always had a shot because our fans weren't going to go away. You know, they knew that we were going to make the effort to come back, and so they were there for us. And, you know, that's what makes a great home court, and that's what helps your program because, you know, recruits see that. They want to come and play in that atmosphere. And now this year, there's no atmosphere. It's nobody's fault. There's no atmosphere anywhere. And so, like you said, the benches have become very involved. That's become, I think, just within the last couple of weeks, almost every game you see now, the benches are really into the game. And of course, just being an old coach, I'm sure some coaches go, hey, look, if you guys don't get excited, you're not going to get in the game. And so, you know, they got to jump around a little bit in the sideline.
Right. Yeah, and I saw that. I know when it was when I was watching the Indiana and the Maryland game, they mentioned that you know, whoever has the biggest, whoever benches the loudest or cheering on more, like you say, it makes them the home team in a sense. And as a coach, like how would you coach that situation? Like I know, like you said, you know, in the sense of got to get the bench got to be more involved. Everything is, you can hear more of the conversation now because there's no fans in the stands, and you know everything is more audible, so you can hear what's going on.
Yeah, I think that you know, you look at it, and it's really interesting because normally when you played at home, if you're playing at Maryland, for example, and you play at home, you know the crowd's going to be great. You know they're going to help you if you get down. You know the whole thing. Well, now when you go on the road, you don't have to worry about Illinois' crowd. You don't have to worry about what the crowd's like in Michigan. And they're tough places to play. A lot of the Big Ten schools are really tough places to play. And so that's great. You know, you just walk in there, and if your bench is really into it, and, you know, really pushing the guys that are out on the floor, you can develop almost a home court situation. But then on the other hand, it's the same at your place, you know, where you don't have your fans there. So now here comes Michigan in, and they're going to be into it. They're really a good team. And so your bench, the players, everything we can to win the game. And that's always been a team thing, you know, where you try to do that. Just do whatever it takes to win the game.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I know it got to be, like I said, I know it had to be tough adjustment for the players. Not knowing they were going to have a season, then having a season, like you said, with no fans and just trying to adjust to that. You know, for the players to have to adjust to, first of all, didn't know if they was going to have a season or not, and then having to adjust to no fans and then wrapping your head around that, you know, coming off a year before when they had a chance to go really far, but now they lost some key players in Conway and Sticks, and having to make that adjustment, you know, to everything. I know as a young player, it's hard to sometimes maybe comprehend that, but then they have to adjust fast because the season starts.
Yeah, I think that's the key. I mean, last year, a lot of people thought Maryland would do well in the tournament. Well, we'll never know. You know how the tournament goes. Travis, you were in it just about every year. A lot depends on who you draw. A lot depends on how good the team's playing, you're playing against, you know, how well you're playing. You know, are you on a roll? Are you on a hot streak going into the tournament? So it's a shame they didn't get a chance. You know, the way I look at that is a shame they didn't get a chance to prove themselves, because you're tired of hearing some people say, well, they would have done great in the tournament. Other people say, well, maybe they would have been okay. Yeah. And, you know, the chance was there to prove it for yourself as a team. Okay, this is us. This is what we did in the tournament. And I always like that, you know, the idea. Now you come back this year, you know, and everybody's fired up. You lost a couple of really good players, obviously. But at the same time, when you play this year, you don't know how many practices the other teams really had. If they were practicing more than you, as much as you, or whatever. And, you know, you look at a team like Villanova, for example, right now, a great basketball team. They haven't played since before Christmas. And so, you know, it's really different this year. The only thing you can do, and this is one thing that I always liked about, you know, coaching and playing, you can only control what you control. So the only thing Maryland has to focus on is getting ready for each game, whatever that takes place, whether you have to take an extra day off from practice because of testing or whatever, you still have one job to do, and that's get ready. And that's every player, right? You know, the players that really care, they do everything they can to get ready for that next game. That means practicing hard every day for 2 weeks in a row without any games this year. You have to be able to do that.
Now, you're absolutely right. Like you said, it just, you know, as a, you know, you coaches, you know, you coaches always told us, you know, to adjust to whatever environment we're in, you know, and that's just all about being a competitor. Like you said, if you a competitor, you're going to survive and make do in any situation, because that's just what we do as athletes and as players. It's funny. I was at Lonnie on last week, and the day before that, I had him on. I saw when you guys went on that run to the Final Four, and then ended up going and obviously playing in Indiana and winning that championship. And I learned so much more about Maryland, about you as a coach. Than I did, you know, going watching that whole scenario. It brought back a lot of memories for me just watching you guys, you know, going to the first Final Four and then coming back the very next year, doing it again and then winning it all. Like, what was that experience like as a coach? And, you know, when you came to Maryland and everything that was going on during that time and having to fight through a lot of things, but then getting that satisfaction of, like you said, like I said, winning the Final Four and then ended up coming back the next year winning the championship. With no McDonald's All-Americans, I should say.
Yeah, but you were one. We had a McDonald's All-American when you were playing.
I ain't win a championship, though. I ain't win that championship.
Yeah, but, you know. But the thing is, like, I thought we were close a couple times. I thought we were – we had teams before the 2001 team that went to the Final Four. You know, like the Steve Francis team, I thought was really a good basketball team. Steve only played 1 year. But Urbina Kesey tore his Achilles tendon a week before the end of the regular season, and we lost in the NCAA tournament to a very tough second-round opponent, Ron Artest in St. John's. And we didn't have anybody that could bang with Artest. Artest was one of the most physical players I ever coached against in college. And Urbina Kesey was 6'9", 250.
Right.
You know, and there wouldn't have been any of the stuff that was going on with Artest out there if Urbina was out there. But, you know, that's the way it went. But, you know, a lot of times you have to learn things, and we could have done a better job of preparing, you know, the whole thing. And, you know, that was really a good team. And then the Joe Smith, Keith Booth, Dwayne Simpkins, X-ray hip, Johnny Rhodes team in 95 lost to Connecticut and Ray Allen to go to the Elite Eight. And Ray Allen's probably one of the greatest shooters of all time, you know, Reggie Miller, whatever, you know, Curry now, you know, whatever you want to talk about. And so here you go, you get a chance to go to the Elite Eight, you get to the Sweet 16, you got to go against Ray Allen. Well, maybe you don't want to see Ray Allen to the Final Four, you know, or something like that. And I got sick that year. I missed 2 weeks because of pneumonia. They're the only three games I missed in 42 years of coaching. And I really felt bad about that because, you know, when I got back, it just wasn't, we didn't quite have the same feel, you know, as a team. And that was really a good team. We were probably a year young. We would have, if Joe didn't go early as the number one pick in the draft, Joe Smith, we would have had everybody back. All the starters would have been back, and that would have been a very good team. So there's a lot of things have to go right. In other words, not just being a good team. You know, you get to the Elite Eight, everybody's well-coached. Everybody works hard. You know, there's no fluke most years in getting to the Elite Eight. So we put ourselves in a position to do it, and we finally broke through in 2001, but we had to beat Stanford, who was the number one seed out west, on their home court, basically, in Los Angeles. So that was a big win for the program and, you know, obviously for our players.
Right. Yeah, it was just like I said, just watching that over again and talking with Lonnie as a player, you know, him from being from this area. Like you said, you guys had the Final Four the year before and then came back and won the championship. Just getting it from a player's perspective of that feeling of winning a championship on that level. And then, you know, I just wanted to hear your perspective of it as a coach. Coaching and winning the national championship is like one of the biggest, you know, rewards you can receive. And that just whole experience, I just can imagine how amazing it must have been, especially you playing at Maryland and then coming back winning the championship at Maryland as a coach.
Yeah, it was very fulfilling. I always felt Maryland, you know, could do more. You know, I Lefty Giselle had some really good teams, you know, Len Bias, the whole thing, going back to McMillan Elmore, people like that, you know, Mo Howard, great players that played in Maryland's program. And to not, you know, get to the Final Four, that really bothered me as a Maryland graduate and as a Maryland basketball player. But then you get involved with it, and when you're in a league like the ACC back then, Duke of Carolina was going to be ranked every year in the top five in the country. So there's usually only one team from each league, maybe make the Final Four. And so you had to get through that. You had to get through the Duke Carolina thing. And it took us a while to get good enough where I thought our players felt that they could go play a Carolina at Duke and not be intimidated, not feel like they had to play great just to have a chance to win the game. And we did. That was the key thing we tried to do with the program.
Being a player that played at Maryland, then coming back, being now the head coach, winning a national championship, then making it to the Hall of Fame, just having basically all that hard work and dedication to the game rewarded.
Yeah, I when I left Maryland, first I was a graduate assistant my fifth year at Maryland. And then I became a junior varsity coach in Camden, New Jersey. And coached in high school for a couple of years. And, you know, there was no way I ever thought I'd, you know, get back to be the head coach at the University of Maryland. So, you know, I just kept moving along. I was at Lafayette College for 6 years as the assistant basketball coach and soccer coach. And then I was a year at BC as an assistant coach. And my first head coaching job was the American U job, which I got in 1978. But, you know, really during that time, there was no thought, you know, Lefty was rolling pretty good at Maryland, and there was never any thought that I would ever be back at, you know, University of Maryland coaching basketball. I mean, that's just incredible the way that worked out. And, you know, it was really a positive experience. The toughest thing coming back to Maryland was I had a great job at Ohio State. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't have left Ohio State for any other job except the University of Maryland job. And like you said, it was because I played there, I'd gotten my degree there. And, you know, you always want to see your old school do really well. And I just thought, and maybe I was young and, you know, not real smart or whatever, but I always thought we could be as good as anybody at the University of Maryland. I thought we had the resources to be able to do that.
Right. So how big was it for when Walt ended up staying, doing everything that was going on for the program? Like how, because obviously I wasn't around during the time to understand what was going on, but just for Walt being from this area and then staying, like how big was that for the program and how big was that for you?
Well, Walt was one of those special players. I mean, he still has an ACC record. He scored over 30 points a game in 8 straight league games. And you just don't do that in the ACC. You're playing against top 10 teams. And, you know, Walt was by far our best scorer. So every defense was set up to try to take him out of the game. And, you know, Walt just had the ability to play 4 different positions. We played him at the point. We played him at the power forward, everything in between. And, you know, he was incredible. And I just wish he would have gotten the opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament, because my second year, the NCAA came out with the sanctions where they had been investigating the previous administration. And, you know, Walt wasn't allowed to play on live TV. He wasn't allowed to play in the NCAA tournament. Now, Walt could have gone anywhere in the country and played right away. And that's the rule when the school receives sanctions. But Walt's parents were from Temple Hills, and they really I think it was very important for Walt that they both could see him play as many games as possible. And that had a big thing to do with Walt's decision.
Yeah, so, I mean, like I said, I know that, like I said, that had to be huge. I know Walt, that's like a big brother to me, great guy. I heard so much, many stories about, you know, him as a player. And just, you know, just like you said, just hearing, I didn't even know that, you know, that he scored 30 plus games, 8 straight games in ACC. And I know it was a tough league back then. Like, what was the experience like for you being able to close out a legendary arena like Coldfield and then being able to open up the new arena that I had an opportunity to open up was Comcast Arena? Like, two big moments in Maryland history, just going through that experience as a coach.
Yeah, 2002 was really obviously the national championship, but we went undefeated during the regular season in Coldfield House. And, you know, that was kind of fitting. We went out that way. The last game of the regular season was against Virginia. We had most of the former players back for a ceremony after the game. And it was a great game. You know, Virginia wasn't any good. I think they had 90-some. And so it was just a tremendous game. And it was fitting for the place. There's never been a place like Coldfield House. You know, you can talk about Cameron. You can talk about, you know, Kansas and all those places. Cole, you know, was 15,000 people when you squeezed everybody in there. There's basically no heat. The people provided the heat. It would go from about 50 degrees at the start of the game to 100 degrees in the second half. And we won a lot of games just because of it was our place. And that was for me to be able to coach in Coldfield House and, you know, having played there, that was certainly a big thrill for me. And then, you know, the idea started about 99, I guess, when we were winning some games to build a new place. And I always wondered whether Cole could have been, you know, redone. Things had to be done. It would have been very expensive because Cole was really a big building. I think people that didn't go in there except for the games didn't realize how far that went down and, you know, how many classrooms were in there and things like that. And so
right.
It's probably in the best interest of Maryland to build, you know, back then it was Comcast and became Xfinity. But at the same time, you know, Cole was a gym. You know, that's all it was. It was a basketball gym. And it just happened to seat 15,000 people with no bad seats, which is incredible. You know, there was no poles, no nothing. Everybody had a great seat in Coldfield House. And Xfinity is nice. You can do a lot of things in there and all that. But I know one thing, if I had to win one game, my life depended on it, we'd be back in Cole playing that game.
Yeah, absolutely. I was at that Virginia game where y'all played the last game of the playing in Coldfield House. And like you said, it was hot. You know, it was definitely hot, a hot arena. But it was a great atmosphere. I've been to a couple of games. I've been in the Duke game there. And just like you said, everybody's right there. It's hot. But like the rent is just going, the crowd, the fans are going crazy. Like you said, it's like probably the best, has to be like the best arena to play in, especially if that's your arena, you know, as a home team.
Yeah, I know. I knew it was good because the other teams hated to come in there to play. And that's always a good sign.
Right, exactly. I played there a couple of times in high school, but man, I never had the opportunity to play there, you know, when I was at Maryland and to experience that atmosphere. I mean, Comcast was a great arena too, because, you know, like you said, our fans are great.
Yeah.
They're always going to root us back, and the ACC was huge. So, yeah.
Well, Cole had the famous DeMatha Lou Alcindor game, you know, that really kind of, it was kind of like a step up in the interest that people had in high school basketball. That game got national attention because it was DeMatha, Morgan Wooten, and then here comes Lou Alcindor down with Powell Memorial, and no one ever thought DeMatha had a chance to win that game. And you know, Cole was great that day too.
Yeah, me playing DeMatha, you know, I definitely heard legendary stories about that game. I mean, they still talk about that game to this day. So, like I said, just a great arena. I wish I had the opportunity to play there when I was at Maryland, but, you know, I did have the experiences to see you guys play there and see how crazy the fans were. And It was definitely a great atmosphere. Do you ever miss the game in regards to coaching? And I mean, obviously now it's probably tough because of COVID and things are just a lot different, but do you ever wish, like, you know, you would want to come back, or thought about coming back after you left, thought about coming back and coaching?
Yeah, well, I'm too old to come back. I mean, I was in Maryland 22 years. And so I it would have been difficult to go somewhere else at the end of those 22 years. And, I accomplished, some things in my career that I never thought I would accomplish. And so I didn't feel like I left a lot on the table. But you never know. I mean, your health has a lot to do with that. The way I coached, I was kind of into it. And, some guys can just sit there, and that's not me, as you know. I was very tired at the time. I wasn't feeling good. Probably if I really wanted to, after a year or two, I probably still could have gotten a pretty good job somewhere. But at the same time, I'm happy what we accomplished in Maryland. I had great assistants, great players to make those things happen. And not many coaches get the opportunity. I coached in the Big East, the Big Ten, and the ACC. And so, I went against almost every great coach in the country during my coaching career. So, and every year was tough. And I really enjoyed that. There was never, where I didn't feel like I was getting tested all the time. And I think that's what makes you better as a player. And that's what makes you better as a coach, that, you can't just, okay, I had a good year last year, so I'll be good this year. And Travis, you got to bring up the fact that in 2004, we won the ACC championship with you playing a leading role. You made the all-tournament team that year, right?
I did, yes.
Yeah. Well, that year we had to play Wake Forest, NC State, and Duke, the 3-2-1 seeds in the state of North Carolina. And we had to play Wake Forest at 9 o'clock at night. I think we got back to the hotel like at 12:30. Yeah. Had to play the next day at 1 against NC State. We're down 20 at halftime. And I just went in and yelled for about 15 minutes at halftime. We came out and we had the lead. I was worried. We got the lead too quick. We were up like 5 with still 5 minutes left. And, NC State might come back. And then, of course, the game against Duke was ridiculous. We got down. They came back. We, all those things happened. And, that was J.J. Redick and the crew from Duke. And, we were able to win that game. And John Gilchrist, no one ever played better for 3 straight days in the ACC tournament than John Gilchrist did at that time. Right. He was the MVP.
I know as a player, just going through that whole experience and that run we had to make to try to make the tournament that year, we were young. We came in on the bubble. They saying all we had to do is beat Wake Forest and we have a chance. And then been down by NC State by 20, having to come back and win that, and then beat Duke in the championship in double overtime. It was the first ACC championship for Maryland since 84. Like, what was that experience like watching that, knowing what we went through that season, and then we coming out and winning the championship that year? Like, what was the feeling as a head coach and seeing all that take place, for your players?
It was very rewarding because a lot of people wrote us off. We weren't going to make the NCAA tournament. We heard all that all year, and we stayed together. There were some ups and downs, but we stayed together. And I think it just showed. And that's one thing when you're coaching and you're trying to win games. I mean, that's your primary goal. But at the same time, hopefully things are happening that stay with players the rest of their lives. And that was one of them for me as a coach. I never thought there was going to be a time where I couldn't win a particular game or come out of a big hole in the game or whatever, because we did it. We had to do it all 3 of those games. I mean, you're talking about Skip Prosser, Herb Vasindak, and Mike Krzyzewski coaching, those teams, and all those guys could really coach. And we just stayed together. And, guys like Mike Grinnell, he never even got a chance to play much during the year. He had to hit 2 big free throws. And of course he says he made JJ Redick miss that last jump shot that made the game. And, and that's debatable. I've looked at that tape a couple of times, but, but that was typical of that team. We never separated. We were always there for each other. And because we really got, I remember that year, we were really criticized a lot of times, but that's because people were really spoiled because of 2001, 2002, and 2003. We missed a jump shot against Michigan State to go to the Elite Eight that year. So if you didn't measure up to that, we had set the bar awful high, and you guys had to pay the price for that, because that's why I was so happy we came back and won the ACC championship.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the greatest experiences I have, and they show it every year when the ACC tournament happens. They show that game and that run, and I just seen it like maybe like a couple of months ago. They had it on, and they were showing like some of the greatest games or some of the greatest moments in ACC tournament history, and they showed our game and just going through that. You know, like I said, as a player, you know, it was one of the greatest moments of my life. I know. I think we talked before in the sense of, you know, you used to give me a lot of advice, you know, and tell me things that I need to work on and things. I'm not gonna lie. During that time, I was stubborn, you know, thought I knew what was best, you know, maybe listening to people in my ear saying what I needed to do. And, you know, how many times, I know I spoke to you a number of times about, you know, I appreciate everything that you did for me and the things that you tried to teach me that I knew that could help me further out my career. How many guys come back and always say that they wish they would have listened to you more or would have took your advice more, you know?
Well, that's one of the great things of coaching, is that hopefully you're not just, you know, whatever your sport is, you're not just winning games in that sport, but you are making a difference. Now, what happens a lot, and I'm sure I was the same way when I was a player, as you start to get older, you realize that the coach really was trying to help you in a lot of situations where you thought the coach was against you or, you know, whatever. And that's the way it goes. I mean, but, you know, a lot of guys come back now that, you know, played with you, that played right after you or whatever. And it's a good time. It really is, because, you know, you're like man to man now, you know, it's not like player coach anymore. And, you know, it's a much better social situation where, you know, you can be honest with each other and things are really good. But I think that's really an underrated part of coaching, whether you're a high school coach, college coach. I don't know about the pros, I never did that, but I do know that the satisfaction in college coaching a lot of times came from practice sometimes. In other words, you come into practice, you want to get better at a certain thing, and you got better that day.
Like I said, coach, you know, I definitely appreciate you. You know, I was lucky and fortunate enough to, you know, play for two great coaches, you know, Coach Ruben and yourself. I wish I would have listened more back then, but a lot of those lessons and things that you taught me still stay with me to this day. Like I said, I definitely appreciate it, Coach. I appreciate you taking time out your schedule to come join us today. I know a lot of people wanted to hear from you and hear some experiences. So thanks for coming on with Go Terpins with Travis Garrison. Make sure you go out there and subscribe on Spotify and iTunes. Thanks again to my former coach, legendary Hall of Famer, national championship winner, Coach Gary Williams. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Travis. Always great to see you, and keep it going. You're doing great.
All right. Thanks a lot, Coach. You have a good one, and continue to enjoy your time.